You're listening to the MoneyWeb Now podcast series with Simon Brown. Live streamed every weekday at 6:30 a.m.
It's Wednesday, 24 April. Tesla earnings missed estimates, but the stock was up 13% in aftermarket trade. I'm Simon Brown, coming at you live and loud from the MoneyWeb Global Studios in Johannesburg, South Africa. On the show today, Kim Olefe from Thrive South Africa. The Capitec results. The market loved the Sasol update that it hated. Luigi Marinus from PPS Investments. Trends from first quarter, and which can we expect to continue during the year? And then we're chatting with Fenalto South Africa on using derivative trading options, entities that are registered with FSCA. This show is brought to you by Stanlib. Visit stanlib.com to get in touch with one of their investment specialists. Stanlib Asset Management is an authorized financial services provider. Morning headlines from MoneyWeb. Copper 360, suspected victim of market manipulation, has asked the FSCA to investigate. Business Day, sticky inflation lowers chances of interest rate cuts. The Reserve Bank's monetary policy review casts doubt on whether the figure will move below 5% in 2024. Morning markets. The US was green. S&P up 1.2%. NASDAQ up 1.5%. The East is green. Sydney only just 0.02% higher. Tokyo up 2%. Hong Kong up 1.6%. And Tencent up 2.7%. Commodities mostly green. Gold 2,335. Brent 88.37. Platinum a weaker by a few dollars at 922. And palladium 1,027. Rand 19.10. Bitcoin 66,600. Top 40 opening call, about 430 points to the green. That is 0.6% higher.
MoneyWeb Now on the money. Also available on podcast.
Training now with Kim Olefe from Thrive South Africa. Kim, appreciate the early morning. Capitec results. I got to say, I read the numbers. I thought they were good. I mean, cost to income down at 39%. Everything going in the right direction. Market loved it, up 7.8%. But I don't know, Capitec, notwithstanding good growth, looks expensive relative to the other banks. Your take on the results and the valuation?
Morning, Simon. Capitec's results are quite impressive. So their strong customer focus has proven to be a major advantage, with 22 million clients making them a dominant player. But just a deeper look into some drivers of their growth. A big factor was a 30% jump in net transaction and commission income, reaching 13.9 billion rand. And this obviously suggests Capitec's clients are increasingly using digital transactions and adopting new value-added services, which is a trend they've capitalized on quite well. On the credit quality side, there's a point to consider. So Capitec relaxed lending criteria in late 2021 to help clients post-pandemic. But recent economic pressures have impacted loan performance. So their credit impairment charges rose 38%, pushing their credit loss ratio higher. So I think looking ahead, it'll be interesting to see how they navigate this. They've already tightened lending criteria again, but with rising inflation and interest rates, careful management of their loan book will be crucial to maintain healthy credit quality. But overall, I think Capitec's strong customer base, their focus on growth sectors and diversified revenue streams position them well for the future. I'm particularly interested to hear more about their plans for the business banking rollout.
Yeah, of course, they took over their business bank, and that could potentially help. I got to say, I agree with you. I mean, the numbers were really excellent. The other side of the coin was Sasol. They had a production, sales metrics and production for 9 months ending March, and the market hated it. Stock was down 10.8%. It's pretty much back at those lows from earlier this year and 2021. That after a run-up to 170. Sasol is the stock that seems to just be taking. I mean, I fortunately have left it alone, but there must be a lot of traders out there with numb fingers as a result.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Goodness, you keep bringing me back to Sasol. the news from Sasol is concerning, and the share price reflects that. Production volumes at their Secunda have missed expectations, falling 9% short of the previous quarter. And this translates to a 4-year production miss as well, with their revised guidance coming in at 6.9% to 7.1 million percent below the prior range, obviously, of 7 to 7.3. But we've also seen that coal mining hasn't improved as quickly as anticipated. And there've also been safety incidents, including a fatality in March, bringing the annual total to 5. So all of this has impacted Sasol's ability to meet coal production targets. In fact, Bloomberg Intelligence also sees ongoing supply chain disruptions potentially impacting the chemical sales growth, which was previously forecasted between 0 and 5%. And to make matters worse, the company expects these continued headwinds through the last quarter of the fiscal year, citing macro volatility and geopolitical risks, which is a worrying sign, you know, and it could lead to downward revisions in revenue estimates for the year. So I think for me, two key questions. Are there any plans to invest in their infrastructure? And is Sasol going to address the supply chain issues?
Yeah, I take your point. And the jury's out on both of those. Someone just tweeted me and said, Sasol, weapon of mass destruction. And certainly, if you've got that in your portfolio, that's exactly how it feels. Kay Molefe from Thrive South Africa, appreciate the early morning insights.
Hear that? Nothing. Your money can do more when it blocks out the noise, as hard as it is these days. When you invest in the Stanley Balanced Cautious Fund, we manage the risks so that you can see stable inflation-beating returns through market cycles. Invest with more certainty at stanlib.com/more. Stanlib is an authorized financial services provider and a registered manager.
MoneyWeb now on the money.
I'm chatting with Luigi Marinas. He's our portfolio manager at PPS Investments. Luigi, appreciate the time today. Looking back at our first quarter, it really, my sense, I suppose, three themes. One of them was new, which was the delayed rate cut. So we kind of forget that there had been talk around a March rate cut for the Fed, but seemed optimistic and never came to fruition. The other, of course, was big tech continuing the run from 2023 and DMs continuing to outperform emerging market.
Good day, Simon. Yes, that's exactly right. I think what we're seeing from an interest rate cut perspective is becoming a bit more worrying, actually. Post-quarter end, actually, we saw that the FRAs actually flattened out quite a bit in South Africa. And we're starting to hear the first talk about maybe that cut's not going to happen and the next move might actually be a hike. So I don't know if that's just scaring the market, but I don't think that will be very positive for markets. I think we were equally surprised by how strong the tech counters continued to perform. They do look quite expensive, but sometimes momentum is quite strong in equity markets, and we see that continuing. So we would never say that you should not have any exposure even to some expensive asset classes. And so I think the key there, and I think the lesson to be learned, is to remain diversified and have exposures across different asset classes, because you're not quite sure how that's going to play out. And then there has been a bit disappointing, like you mentioned, from an emerging market perspective, that we haven't really kind of seen the fruits of relatively cheap markets.
Yeah.
And so developed markets continue to outperform emerging markets. But we remain confident that at some point that's going to change. And so we still have some South African exposure in portfolios, but we have some emerging market exposure in portfolios as well.
You mentioned cheap, and the one sector, and bringing it home to South Africa, is financials. I mean, we've got, what, high single-digit PEs. We've got, frankly, high single-digit dividend yields at the same time. Yet the financials were under pressure in the first quarter.
No, exactly. It was surprising. I mean, financials were down 7%. So that was where the negative portion of the market came from. The other sectors in South Africa were actually quite flat, slightly positive. When there's uncertainty around interest rates, that affects financials, banks in particular. And as you know, markets don't like uncertainty. Markets don't like volatility. And I think the banks in particular are feeling the brunt of that. And so that was a negative impact for financials in the first quarter of the year.
You mentioned asset classes. And of course, bonds has been, I mean, I suppose it's one of the huge beneficiaries of rising interest rates the world over, high inflation. Bonds really have had their day in the sun.
I suppose it depends how you view it, Simon. So getting there is difficult as you have that kind of yield increasing and this negative capital effect. I think everybody knows that the relationship as yields increases, the bond price decreases. And so you kind of have to experience that pain in order to get the opportunity. But in South Africa, we just saw the yield on the 10 years at 11% now, give or take. So that's a good yield. It doesn't come in a straight line, unfortunately, so you don't get 11% every year for 10 years.
Mm-hmm.
But if you can withstand some of that volatility, I think then it's a worthwhile investment over the long term. And last year in the US, for example, we saw the US 10-year kind of get close to 5%, which we haven't seen in many years. And we actually started holding some US bonds for the first time that I can recall in our portfolios, and portfolios have definitely benefited from that as well. So definitely, we think there's opportunity going forward. I mean, it won't be great if we see interest rates increase or this further delay in cutting interest rates. It's not helpful from that perspective. But I think if you hold on to the bonds that you have over the long term, I think it's going to be a very good asset class to have held.
Yeah, 5% on the US 10-year. I think I'm with you. I don't know that I've ever seen it. And I got to say, I always stayed away from bonds. They were boring. And suddenly they're in my portfolio because they're doing what they say on the sticker. We talked about emerging markets up front. Of course, South Africa is an emerging market. The big emerging market is China. Looking better, equities still trailing.
Yeah, I mean, again, a bit of a surprise in that regard. But reasonable kind of macroeconomic indicators that we've seen from the Chinese market, consumer confidence, business confidence seems reasonable. The GDP growth is above 5% real. Those are good numbers. I think what the market expected and what normally happens in China is that the government steps in terms of difficulty and they kind of help the Chinese market and gives them a bit of a boost.
Mm-hmm.
They've taken a bit of a backseat recently and they've expected the market to do that for itself. So it's a bit of watching and seeing how it's going to play out. So that has meant that Chinese equity returns haven't quite given the type of returns that you'd expect in these macroeconomic conditions. So we wait and see. And that is a big driver of emerging markets. I mean, they make up a big component of the emerging market index. And so from an emerging market perspective as a whole, if China doesn't do well, you do get that feeling that emerging markets are kind of on the back foot to some extent. But that, again, doesn't mean that investors should have no Chinese exposure. I think there's good opportunities in the Chinese markets. I mean, they're tech markets, for example, also looks quite positive, and it's a bit of a wait and see at the moment.
Which often is investing, and that's the key point. I mean, you don't want to rush to where it's all happening. You also want to rush to where it can happen, which is those attractive valuations, which is, to your point, mostly around the emerging markets.
Exactly, and that's the way that we see it.
We'll leave it there. That's Luigi Marinus. He's portfolio manager at PPS Investments. Luigi, appreciate the time.
Your money knows that reaching new heights means turbulence, but what if you don't have to feel it? Our partnership with JP Morgan Asset Management gives you access to a broad range of global strategies. So when you invest in StanLib's Global Multi-Strategy Diversified Growth Fund, your money can withstand the ups and downs caused by market fluctuations. Seek more returns at stanlib.com/more. StanLib Asset Management is an authorized financial services provider.
MoneyWeb now, on the money.
Chatting now with Danny Marwis. He is CEO of Finalta South Africa. Danny, appreciate the early morning time. Our regulator in South Africa, FSCA, they're not shy about handing out fines. And they've just, last month warned against 14 FSPs who are not licensed to provide derivative trading options to clients. This is huge risk, not just to the FSP, but of course to the client as well. Essentially, operating without an ODP license it's a horror idea.
Yes, yes, exactly. And when it comes down to regulatory compliance, for FSPs, first of all, FSPs are required to comply with regulations designed to protect consumers, right? Mm-hmm. So this includes ensuring fairness in the treatment of customers, and of course, providing clear information about the financial product being sold. So, therefore, for the FSPs who are perceived as not customer-oriented in their day-to-day operation, I think it can be hard to cultivate a positive reputation or even to retain customers. So in South Africa, the FFCA, so your Financial Sector Conduct Authority, plays a key role in monitoring the conduct of FSPs, in order to safeguard the interests of consumers. And the ones who are willing to ignore the carrot of the sterling reputation with a client, well, I think may find themselves in hot waters with the FFCA, risking, of course, regulatory action that can end up being very pricey, I would say.
Yeah, I mean, it's fines, and I take your point, it's reputational, and at some point, I don't know, the FSCA might actually start withdrawing FSP licenses. But you mentioned clients there. I mean, there's risk for client as well. I mean, this is why we have the regulatory environment. If a client is trading and their broker doesn't have an ODP license, that, I mean, things could go horribly wrong, and to your point, I mean, that could result in financial loss for the client.
Yes, it can, because at the end of the day, you don't know how the FSP is going to behave regarding the safety of your funds, right? And even like in terms of the trading platform or the, you know, or I would say the fairness and the transparency of your trade and, you know, I would say the behavior of the FSP regarding your dealings with the actual FSP. So yes, it can go definitely very, very wrong.
That's a good point there. I mean, what the FSCA is trying to do here is make sure that that clients are treated properly, treated with respect and truthfully, or treated equal and fairly. And there's no sort of underhand stuff, because certainly I've seen that. I mean, and particularly, I mean, I admit a long time ago, but there have been some dodgy actors in this space globally and locally.
Yeah, and of course, I mean, you know, when it comes down to the actual consequences for, you know, any, I would say, offshore FSP or onshore FSPs mm-hmm. who are willing to, you know, offer a derivative without the proper licensing, it can go south, you know, very, very quickly. And, you know, the way that your regulators choose to enforce and reassess parameters, it's actually not static. It's really not. It's ever-changing and evolving. And, you know, at the end of the day, FSPs offering derivatives are evolving in a fast-moving and high-risk industry. I mean, the FFCA must be able to move quickly, and they are typically armed with, you know, like a vast array of tools to combat these, you know, this bad behavior, let's say, these bad actors. And the actual consequences for the FSPs extend well beyond simply losing, you know, your, you know, brand reputation or customer confidence. There can be some critical legal ramification for those FSPs who are not compliant. I mean, for instance, since the introduction of the FMA, you know, your Financial Markets Act, the FSCA has not been shy, like you said, actually, in handing out fines and imposing legal penalties. I mean, yeah, if you are like an onshore brokerage and you are keen to keep offering derivative trading without the proper licensing, I think it's a very bad idea, and I think about a month ago, the FFCA actually issued an official warning to traders stating to exercise caution when conducting, you know, dealings with FSPs who are not properly regulated. And for other FSPs, I think we saw that also about a month ago, the FFCA imposed some heavy administrative penalties on the entities themselves, the associated key individuals, and the directors themselves. I think it was worth millions of rand. Actually, one recent example was Veracity Markets. I think the entities themselves, I mean, the associated directors and key individual got fined for unauthorized derivative transaction. And yeah, these were like significant fines.
For those FSPs who haven't got their process in order and an ODP license and aren't fully compliant, I mean, what sort of steps? I mean, is it a case of approaching, is it as simple as putting in an application and making sure that you meet all the requirements from the FSCA?
Yes, totally. It's definitely a long process. It does require, for instance, you do need to have a board, and mm-hmm. you do need to have like the right, you know, processes in place and the right compliance framework. But at the end of the day, it's an application like any other application. I think, you know, like if your business model is purely focused on derivative, either you go down the application route, I would say, or either you decide to partner up with a company like Finalto, who is ODP regulated and who can provide an FFCA approved ODP regulatory umbrella. And pretty much the way that it works, it's very straightforward, actually. Okay. You just need to, I mean, let's say you are running your own broker. For some reason, you don't want to apply for the ODP license, which I think is a bad idea, but let's say you don't want to do it. What you just need to do, actually, is to find an ODP regulated prime brokerage like us and pretty much decide to put in place a liquidity solution that is ODP compliant.
Gotcha. Okay. So there are perhaps some easier processes than having to do it all yourself. You can almost, as you say, sit in an umbrella space. We'll leave that there. That's Danny Marwis. He's CEO for Nolte South Africa. Appreciate the early morning time. And our question today on LinkedIn and Twitter, if you're trading, are you sure your provider is regulated correctly by the FSCA? Have you checked? Do you know how to check? Have your vote, have your say, LinkedIn and Twitter. That's it for today. We were chatting with Simon Fillmore yesterday. He, of course, from Independent Securities, talking around opportunities in China. And in fact, Luigi again today mentioned China might be offering some opportunity there. We asked if you were bullish on Chinese stocks. Almost half said cautiously yes, but cautiously was the operative word. Third said no way. The rest said yes, absolutely. Have your vote, have your say, LinkedIn and Twitter. This show is brought to you by StanLib. Visit StanLib.com to get in touch with one of their investment specialists. StanLib Asset Management is an authorized financial services provider. We're live every weekday morning on the MoneyWeb website and the app, 6:30 a.m. podcast just after 7. Thanks to my team, Eddie Nubuchle, Nicole, to you for listening, my guests for their time. My name is Simon Brown. This is MoneyWeb Now. We'll chat again tomorrow. Tax on e-commerce.
You've been listening to another MoneyWeb Now podcast, posted every weekday at 7 a.m. on moneyweb.co.za. MoneyWeb Now, on the money.